Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
This is David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint. That's Noble with a K. I'm a lawyer here in Billings, and you can also find me online at LectureFan. Hey, I got a nice message here from Menace from Ennis. He says, Mr. Noble, just want to thank you for filling in for Aaron this week. I think you did a really good job. Well, thank you so much, Menace from Ennis. I appreciate that. That means a lot. Let's go to the phones right off the bat. Lori in Billings. Thanks for calling, Lori.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to make a comment and ask you a question. So we have all these people, especially politicians, but others as well.
Hey, are you on speakerphone by chance, Lori?
No, I'm on my earbud.
Okay, we're having a little
glitchy.
We can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. So people make these wild comments, like the lady who got fired down in Texas, or Representative Crockett. Or others who are making, or Chuck Schumer making all these crazy statements like you commented earlier. And they're very insightful because words have power. We actually have laws to say, even though I'm a great component of free speech and people not getting their feelings hurt by what somebody else said, still words have power, especially when you're in a position of leadership. That is how they got into those positions, were by using words to convince people. But we have hate speech laws. We have laws that say that you can't yell fire like in a theater or something and cause panic and harm. But there's a limit to that free speech. So why are none of these people being arrested or charged with crimes for inciting these riots and the attacks that are going on?
So honestly, Lori, You are allowed to yell fire in a crowded theater. That whole thing about you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, that's false. That's bad law. That's old law from an old Supreme Court case that has been effectively overturned by more recent Supreme Court cases that set I think it's called the Brandenburg test for incitement, which is you can only be like for you to be actually liable for incitement. And to have the government be able to punish you for speech, it has to be pretty severe. Like you can actually say you support the killing of somebody. You can yell fire in a crowded theater. You can do all these things. The only thing you can't do is say something and encourage somebody to commit violence in a situation where it's like almost guaranteed that if you say that person is going to immediately cause serious bodily harm to somebody else. Now, the specifics of what you're talking about, I don't know if it meets that test. Of course, I'm not an expert on the First Amendment or the Brandenburg test or all of those things. I'm with you, though, Lori. Any of these people that are encouraging violence against ICE, that are encouraging violence against federal law enforcement, I'm with you, Lori. I would love to see them arrested. Now, we got to protect free speech, and I do agree with a sort of a very high standard for incitement, because if you do a lower standard, then guess what happens when there's a Democrat in office next? Aaron Flint and I get arrested for stuff we say on the radio, probably.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
We're back broadcasting live to our audience worldwide. You know, I spent so much of Wednesday's show talking about windmills, because Donald Trump just previously had spent a good chunk of a press conference talking about windmills. And then today, this morning, we spent a lot of time talking about solar panels. I've got a story in here about EVs I think everybody's going to love. By the way, we are taking phone calls, open phones, to completely open phone lines. If you call in, you can get on statewide right now, 406-294-0970, 406-294-0970 is the phone number. You can talk about whatever you want to talk about. So apparently Honda has paused all of its plans to accelerate the switch to electric cars following President Trump's decision to slash incentives in the U.S. Honda has, this is from the New York Post, Honda has put the brakes on a large electric SUV. The Japanese giant is going to roll out a new range, a range of battery-powered models. It originally planned to follow the five-seat SUV and sedan with the seven-seat SUV, but has pulled the plug on that project. Honda suspended plans to introduce a big electric vehicle. President Trump's decision to axe a $7,500 federal tax credit for EV customers contributed to Honda's stance. So already wonderful things happening from the Trump's big beautiful bill. Nobody wants some massive electric SUV. But you know what this reminds me of too? It's the same thing. I've got this other story about this Missoula business, solar business, that's crying because, you know, he's no longer going to get taxpayer dollars for his to fund his business and make profits. And it's like, look, these EVs, whether it's the electric vehicles or the solar panels, nobody wants to buy them, which is why the government has to subsidize them and do credits and all of this stuff. Hey, we got Paul Perez with a very special group joining us here on the phone. Paul Perez, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's good to be with you guys.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about the group that you're with.
So I'm the national president of Border Patrol Union. It's a union for Border Patrol agents. We are law enforcement organizations. We have 16,500 members nationwide. And so I've been a Border Patrol agent for 28 years, and so I really enjoy working with our brothers and sisters in green, protecting the border. And with President Trump, we've got more support than we've ever had in my entire career.
Well, I'll tell you this. The listeners of this program definitely support the individual officers in the United States Border Patrol. And I'll tell you this. One of my favorite members of the Trump administration is Tom Homan, who used to be a Border Patrol officer.
He's a good guy. Yep, I know him well.
Do you really? How is he doing such a good job? How is he so good? That's my question.
You know, just having the support of the president saying, hey, this is what I campaigned on. This is a big problem for our country. It went to hell under Biden. Fix it. And it's an easy fix because all we had to do was use the playbook for President Trump's first term, which was make sure the border's secure and get people out. Stop letting people in, like the millions of people, unvetted, that President Biden let in, and we've got a recipe for success there.
Yeah, I always remember Donald Trump talking about how all he wanted to do was just let Border Patrol do their job. I mean, under Biden, he basically turned the Border Patrol into basically just processing illegal aliens into the country and releasing them into the country. I'm sure that was horrible for morale and for the Border Patrol. So is morale up in the Border Patrol now?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Complete opposite. And so you just touched on something that, you know, was a sad time for us in the Border Patrol. Our former chief, he's no longer our chief, he compared what we were doing with processing the illegal aliens for release. He wanted us to process faster, and he compared what we were doing to what he wanted to see, which was he wanted us to process and be as efficient as the Chick-fil-A drive-thrus. He actually said that to our agents. He wanted us to operate like Chick-fil-A, in and out, and all that did was incentivize people to come in because all we were able to do was process and release. That's what this administration wanted. And that chief supported it. Thank God he's no longer with us. We have a great chief now. We have a great commissioner. We have a great secretary. And the leadership all the way up to the White House is just awesome. They're doing a great job allowing us to do the job that we signed up to do.
Yeah, sort of the sense that I get is just the change in policy by the Trump administration has done just the change in policy has done a significant amount to try to cut down on the number of people trying to enter the country illegally. I mean, is that sort of what you're seeing, or is it really just sort of the actual enforcement that's sort of put a halt to the number of people getting in illegally?
You know, the policies. Funny how ending catch and release has the deterrent effect that President Trump said it would have. We told everybody that would listen, if we stop releasing people, they will stop coming. Those that will try to make an entrance, we won't have to have our agents spread thin because now we've got all of our agents on the line. So anybody that does try to make an entry, we're there to detect them. We've got the military helping us out. You know, the beautiful bill is going to give us more agents.
Paul, we're up against the break here in about 45 seconds. If you want to throw, what can people do to support you and your organization, or what do you want our listeners to know? Sort of last thing here.
Hey, you know, the best thing that just give them the support. Let them know that they're supported. You see them out in Montana, you know, hey, just tell them they're doing a great job because that's what they're doing. It's a really, really good time to be a Border Patrol agent under this president.
Well, thank you so much, Paul Perez with the National Border Patrol Union. Appreciate all you're doing. We appreciate the Border Patrol. You've got my support. I think you've got the support of most of the listeners here. We got another caller on the line. It's going to be interesting on this next segment, and then we're going open phones after that. 406-294-0970, 406-294-0970. David Noble in for Aaron Flint. We'll be right back.
Securing America.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu continued his visit to Washington Wednesday with a stop at the Pentagon and a meeting with Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. Both reflected on the recent U.S. strike on Iran's nuclear facilities after several days of Israeli strikes in Iran. Secretary Hegseth.
President Trump was very clear. After 60 days, he gave them every opportunity, and then Operation Rising Lion took place. And the skill of your professionals, what was accomplished, was absolutely incredible.
The secretary adding.
Those B-2 pilots sent a message to the world as well.
An assessment the prime minister agreed with.
I think the entire world took note. I think Iran took note. I think everybody in the Middle East took note of American resolve and of the strength of our alliance.
He added that the action was like the roar of two lions being heard around the world. Kim Reskin, Fox News.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
It's actually David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint. We've got a special guest on the phone lines. Aaron Flint actually did an article related to this new movie that's going to be coming out called The Real Yellowstone. He did this story a little bit ago on the Montana Talks app site, and we now have Tom on the line. Tom, I don't want to mispronounce your last name. How do I pronounce your last name?
It's Tom Mopri, David, and it's been great to be on here on the show, and obviously I've been on the show before with Aaron, and so great to be able to talk to your listeners today.
You're welcome, thanks for joining us, Tom Mopri. So you're a film producer, you're here in Montana, and you've got a new film coming out, is that right?
Yeah, 100%. So tonight at 7 p.m. at the Emerson Theater in downtown Bozeman, we're having the world premiere of The Real Yellowstone. It's part of a multi-film tour that we're doing. We've been producing films about rural communities all over the world. Our first film was called Killing the Shepherd. It was about an African community led by a woman chief who wanted to break the bonds of poverty by waging a war against wildlife poaching. We had a film that came out last year called Killing the Shepherd, The Last Keeper, about the rural folks living in the Scottish Highlands, and they're in this war that's going over land use and land ownership. And a lot of the issues there echo right here in Montana. And so the new film is Killing the Shepherd, The Real Yellowstone. It doesn't have anything to do with the park, but it has everything to do with multi-generational ranching families, almost all of them located right here in Montana.
Yeah, so is the name of that kind of a play on the popular TV show Yellowstone?
100%. As far as the reality is it's a great show that they put together, the Hollywood version, great entertainment. But the issues that people are dealing with out here, and for us, we've got a little nonprofit called the Shepherds of Wildlife Society, and our whole goal is our mission is to reconnect our urban Western society with nature, so that they understand what conservation is and good stewardship of the land. And with 8.1 billion humans on the planet, somebody better be taking care of these wild places and the animals out there. Otherwise, they're going to go the way of the dodo bird. And so our Montana ranchers, you know, wildlife doesn't live in the cities, and it doesn't even live on the tops of our mountains because they're covered in snow and ice most of the year. It lives on fertile ground, farms and ranches and other places around the world. But here in Montana, those ranchers are responsible for being good stewards. And so what we do in the film is showcase the trials and tribulations and what it takes to be a rancher these days and be involved in all the issues that are out there. And boy, it's really tense, and there's a lot of issues. A lot of issues that our legislature deals with. Matter of fact, one of the ranchers that we feature in the film is Representative Eric Alvis from House District 28. Who threw his name in the hat to run for office. I think I was the second person to hear about it after his wife, Robin. And we decided to kind of follow his campaign. He ended up winning and ended up being in the legislature and get sworn in back in January. But, you know, these folks are covering the gamut. We're dealing with endangered species and grizzly bears, wolves. We're dealing with American prairie, the Save the Cowboy folks. And then all the issues, the market issues, the property real estate issues, which really is one of the biggest issues we see out there, is the value of land, because it's gotten so out of whack that there's really no way to run a cow-calf operation, or at least get into the cow-calf business with what you can, what it costs to buy land, because as we all know.
You mean you can't, you're trying to tell me you can't buy range land at $10,000 an acre and finance it and then make of a go of it with a cow-calf operation?
I don't think you can pencil it out there, David.
Right.
It's a really fascinating story. And like I said, tonight we're going to do that. We're actually starting. This is the beginning of a film tour. We're doing all around Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. So we're going to be actually in Glasgow tomorrow night. We're going to be in Lewistown on Sunday at the Judith. We'll be in Havre on Monday, Cut Bank on Tuesday, and then later on in the month we're going to be going to other cities, including Helena, Butte, Great Falls, Billings, everybody. So, and then we're also going to be doing a tour in September in Wyoming.
Well, that's fantastic, and you know, from my perspective, I always view like the ranchers and the farmers as, you know, much, much better conservationists and naturalists and preservers of our environment than any leftist living in some concrete jungle in New York City or L.A. The other thing is, you know, I grew up in Montana, so I love being outside, and in fact, I've always known, you know, from an early age that if you really want a spiritual connection with God, go up into the mountains, go up into the forest. And then it's funny, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, some leftist at some big city university came out with a study that says, hey, you know what, it's kind of weird, we did this study, and the more time you spend in nature, the better your mental health is.
Well, like I like to say, David, I tell everybody there's a reason why a campfire mesmerizes every human being in the world. And it has nothing, and I mean absolutely nothing, to do with roasting marshmallows.
Yeah, no, that's right. And of course, you know, what I like about you and what you're saying is you're a genuine conservationist. You're not a radical environmentalist that's obsessed with CO2. The problem I have with a lot of these environmentalists is they don't actually care about actually preserving our forests or managing our forests or protecting wildlife. They don't actually care about preserving the Amazon rainforest. They're just dead set on windmills and solar panels and shutting down, you know, gas-powered vehicles and fossil fuel power plants. And it's like they've totally lost sight of real conservationism.
Well, and David, man, the one thing people forget what conservation is, most people don't even understand. Gifford Pinchot, late 1800s, one of the founding fathers, well, obviously the Forest Service, also one of the founding guys of the Boone and Crockett Club, you know, he defined, it's a modern construct, it's the wise use of a natural resource. To be a conservationist, you must conserve. It's an act. It's not a state of mind. It's not an emotion. So quite often what we see is this term conservation being bandied around by these environmental groups. We see the media calling them, you know, like we were in Scotland, they were calling the John Muir Trust and a conservation group, yet the CEO of the John Muir Trust gets interviewed by me, who says, listen, we want nature to be free. Well, that's the complete opposite. That's preservation. And that's what we see then. And when you're talking about some of these environmental groups, you know, at the end of the day, I would even question, do they really care about windmills and sun and some of these other issues that they're pushing? I really look, it's all about raising money and having power and control. I mean, at the end of the day, I see these organizations that constantly are changing and moving the goalposts so they can go out and raise money so they can substantiate their existence. In a lot of cases, it's just nothing but, you know,
oh yeah.
Focus.
Are you familiar with Michael Schellenberger? He's a long-standing environmentalist, wrote some books, sort of came away. He wrote a book that basically exposed a lot of those environmentalist groups that are obsessed with windmills and solar panels as basically being funded by the windmill and solar panel industry.
Let's face it, folks. I mean, most of your legislation in Helena is written by lobbyists and, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. There's not a whole lot of people in the legislature that have the prowess to sit down and write a bill. So you do end up with these people that have a vested interest in whatever it is, and they are spending their time and hard-earned dollars to make get what they want to get out of it. And that's just, unfortunately, that's how the world works. And whether it's fortunate or unfortunate, but that's just reality out there. And so, like I said, some of these groups out there have an agenda, and that agenda almost always revolves around power and control.
So, Tom, I have to tell you and our listeners, I have never seen Yellowstone. I've never seen HBO that made it or whatever? Never seen it. But I would like to see the real Yellowstone. If folks can't make it out to Bozeman here tonight, Friday, July 11th, at the Emerson Theater in Bozeman tonight, any websites they can go to, or how else can people try to see this, this movie?
Yeah, no, that's great, David. So we have a pretty good distribution plan on this. We're doing the tours right now. Come August, the film will be available at shepherdsofwildlife.org for a 30-day digital cinema event. You'll be able to watch not only the 90-minute film, but you'll be able to watch the 30-minute panel discussion that we're going to be recording tonight at the Emerson. We've got Rob Cheney, long-time writer for the Mazillion, who's now writing for the Mountain Journal. We've got Trinity Vandenacre, who is a rancher out of Townsend, who's also a internet influencer. And then I've got Brian Yablonsky from PERC, the think tank that deals with private property and environmental stuff here in Bozeman. So they're going to be talking to me. None of them have seen the film yet, so we're going to have kind of their first impressions and how it deals with the issues. And I have to be real honest, folks, there's a lot of real tension out here in Montana. And part of what I'm trying to do, I'm a second-generation journalist, and what I'm trying to do is give a real balanced story so that people can really, truly understand. And really what my films end up doing is they get a lot of people sitting down and making them talk. And that's one thing about Montanans. We're really good about sitting around the table. And even though we may come at things from a different perspective and a different angle, at the end of the day, we usually want to have a lot of the same outcomes, and those got to be positive, and they got to be positive for us, they got to be positive for the wildlife. And so that's why we do these films. And of course, obviously, we want to reach out to that urban group of people who don't even know where their food comes from. And this film does a pretty dang good job of explaining to them that role of the rancher and the issues that they have to deal with in order to be able to stay on the land, which there's a lot of them, as I mentioned.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Tom, with shepherdsofwildlife.org and putting out the film Real Yellowstone. Really appreciate you calling in, Tom. Good to have you. This is Montana Talks, so we're going straight back into the phones. Let's go to Marilyn from Lolo. Marilyn, thanks for calling.
Oh.
All right, sorry, Marilyn. I screwed up the buttons again. You're on now, Marilyn. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thanks for taking my call. So Western Montana Water Rights has a really super good article right now, and people need to go read all of the stuff that they post on there, actually. Steve Daines, okay, we try and love Steve Daines, he right now is trying to put forth this Protect Act, and what it's going to do is he's enhancing his tribal resume and expansion of the tribal jurisdiction over non-Indians. And right now, there's still over 1,000 people that are in water court fighting the water compact that was passed back in the Rhino Republican legislature back in 2015. And, my argument has always been, the Indians claim to be sovereign, but look at all the money that they get from us, and yet they claim to be sovereign. Well, Daines is working on giving them more and more jurisdiction over people who live on tribal land, white guys that have their properties been in on tribal land for years and even generations. And anyway, people that are, this water issue, Flathead Lake, for them and stuff like that, water's going to California and Oregon, so they can pretend to be green.
Marilyn, 10 seconds. Where can people find that article you mentioned?
Western Montana Water Rights.
Right.
Western Montana Water Rights.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the phone call. We'll be right back.
This is where Montana Talks at with Lane Nordland.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture has once again shut down southern ports of entry to cattle shipments and other livestock after a new detection of New World screwworm was discovered in northern Veracruz, Mexico. The pest has now moved roughly 160 miles north of where sterile flies are currently being released, raising serious concerns about its spread toward the U.S. border, which lies about 370 miles north of the latest detection. Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins made the decision decision based on guidance from USDA veterinary staff in Mexico. The move follows an earlier closure and reopening of the ports this year in response to previous outbreaks. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association says the screwworms continue movement puts U.S. agriculture at risk, calling the closure necessary to protect the national cattle herd. NCBA praised Secretary Rollins for removing red tape and increasing surveillance in Mexico, but said the U.S. can't rely solely on Mexico to manage the threat. The group urged USDA to fast-track construction of its sterile fly production facility on U.S. soil. The USDA has already identified Moore Air Base in Texas as the site for a new dispersal facility, and the NCBA said it will continue working with USDA to monitor the situation and protect American cattle producers. I'm Lee Nordblond.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
David Noble in for Aaron Flint. This is Montana Talks. We're going straight into the phones. We got Richard from Jordan. Richard, thanks for calling in.
Good morning. I was unable to call in yesterday because I was at work. But you were having a conversation about the possibility of a sales tax in the state of Montana. And I'd like to remind people about the state of Washington. They adopted a sales tax in 1935, and when it originally came in, it had a cap to where, and there were things that could not tax in a sales tax. Over the course of time, King County became highly liberal, and they own the state of Washington, one county. Now, since that time, they have raised the sales tax in the state of Washington, and they removed the cap. Now there are food products that are able to be taxed in the state of Washington, and which it was never meant to do that. So my whole point is it's a dangerous road to go down to adopt a sales tax because power shifts happen, especially in the state of Montana. It's been Democrat before. It will probably be Democrat again. And you cannot trust politicians to leave something alone, even if it's put into the Constitution that it can't tax this or it can't tax that. They will change it in whatever form they need tax the hell out of us.
Yeah, which is exactly what they've done with property taxes. Property taxes have just gone up to where now we're getting taxed the heck out of our own houses.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. I mean, but I agree with the fact that we can't trust that we're not going to get taxed times three if you adopt a sales tax. But even if they did get rid of one tax, a more dangerous tax is a sales tax because
let me push back on that a little bit, Richard, with this point, which is how is that fair to make property owners pay for everything, but then other people who are living in the community and using the schools and roads, they don't have to pay anything? I mean, a sales tax at least taxes everybody. I don't think that's right to just attack the property owners and expect the property owners to pay for everything.
Well, I completely agree. I mean, but let's take this just a step further. Back when they legalized gambling, that was supposed to go towards education, and it never did. And now that's a legislation problem. I mean, we're supposed to have the best schools in the nation because of gambling that was brought in, and all the revenue that was going to bring in, and it never paid for a single school. You look at the Flathead High School. That thing has been an eyesore since I went to school there back in the 70s. And so my point is, it's a legislation problem and a spending problem.
I agree. I agree with you. And I don't know if you heard me yesterday or the day before, but I've, you know, everybody wants to talk about taxes this and taxes that and cut tax here. It doesn't matter. We don't have a taxing revenue problem. We have record revenues. We got billions in surplus every year. We need to be focused on the spending side of the equation.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking my call, sir.
Hey, great call.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you so much, Richard. I appreciate it. No, we agree, Richard. I think me and you are 100% in agreement. And it's like whether it's the property taxes going sky high all the time or we replace it with the sales tax and that goes sky high all the time, none of that matters if we can never cut spending. And I have yet to see any spending cuts. At least, you know, it was so good to hear Scott Aspenlighter guest host the show on Tuesday and say, hey, I'm trying to get rid of some of these council members here in Billings. And, hey, it's only going to save us 50 grand a year, but at least it's a spending cut. For once in my life, there's a spending cut at the city, at least a proposal. Of course, probably won't pass because we got a liberal city council. But the obsession over taxes and nobody wants to talk about the spending side of the equation. You know, Representative Fitzpatrick is right. If you're spending all of this money, the government's going to tax you one way or the other to pay for it. And so you can focus on the tax side. But when spending is going up and up and up and up and up, we're going to get taxed, folks. So we got to focus on the spending side, in my opinion. We're going to Tim in Great Falls. Tim, thanks for calling.
Yes, thank you. My comment on the property tax is everybody pays it. When you go buy something at the store, that store is paying property tax. When you pay your rent, that landlord is paying property tax. It's included in the price.
I think that's a good point.
But the problem what I see with it, it's worse than the income tax, which is, if you look into that, is a violation of the Fourth and the Fifth, if it were a written law. But the property tax is a tax on unrealized gains. You know, the government prints money, inflates the money supply, and devalues the currency, and that makes asset prices go up. Now, if you don't sell, you're not seeing those gains, but you still have to pay the tax on the for the inflation that the government is producing.
Correct. Yep. That's a great point.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, appreciate the phone call. Great phone calls here today so far. Open phones now, 406-294-0970. Got a message here from Cameron in Billings. He says, do you believe in global warming? ? Cameron, the answer is, it depends on what you mean by global warming. If you're talking about the religion, no, I'm not a religious believer in it. If you're asking me, do I think that we're all going to be dead in 5 years unless we ban fossil fuels? No, I don't believe that. If you're asking me, you know, does the climate change over time? Yeah, I do think that the climate changes over time. It gets hotter, it gets warmer, it gets hotter, it gets warmer. That's kind of why we have things like the ice ages and medieval warm period and things like that. Kevin in Belgrade says, good morning, David. Great job hosting Montana Talks as always. Thank you so much, Kevin. Going back to the property tax issue again, our legislators didn't get it at all this session. We the people voted for Trump and for legislators who we thought would try to legislate on the state level, like the Fed level. I know, isn't that crazy that we actually are getting more conservative policies out of Washington, D.C. right now than we are getting out of Helena, which, frankly, I never thought I'd see that day, but here we are. Kevin goes on, they failed horribly. They need to go back and tax all homeowners and businesses on what they paid, on what and what they purchased their property originally, and then tax the crap out of the people moving here and driving the high costs up, and especially the properties. They're going to pay no matter what because they are running from high prices and costs somewhere and coming here and ruining our economy. Yes, Kevin, and filling up our campgrounds. That's a bigger issue. All of the camp. Actually, you know what? This is crazy. I actually found a campsite at Beavertail Hill State Park on July 4th. I actually couldn't believe it. So, you know, some of these state parks here in Montana, you can actually still find campsites. And so, but that's my big complaint with these out-of-staters. Just these out-of-staters just constantly filling up the campgrounds. Okay, I got to get to this story. This is a feel-good story of the day. Trump's TSA is finally ending the shoes-off rule at airports. DHS and TSA are set to announce the end of the longstanding shoes-off airport screening policy. And what's going to happen is it's going to apply broadly to travelers passing through standard TSA security lines at airports nationwide. Folks, I can't stand the TSA. If there's if there's one federal bureaucracy and federal agency I'd get rid of first, it's the TSA. I can feel my blood pressure rising just thinking about walking up to the airport and these TSA people barking at you and ordering you around and yelling at you and raising your, it's just like disgusting. And then the shoes off thing is truly just like revolting. I feel like I'm going to get a foot disease every single time you go through the TSA. It's like, oh really? I got to take off my shoes and put my foot in the exact same spot every single person has put their foot? I mean, it's disgusting. I've been waiting for TSA to get sued because of spreading diseases by forcing everybody's sock to be put on the same spot. So I also remember the old poll that came out. This is one of my favorite polls. And I can't remember how, this is like 5 years ago, maybe longer. But there was a poll of the American people done, and they said, if you had the choice, would you rather keep the TSA exactly the way it is, or simply get rid of TSA and just risk it on your flights? And a majority of the American people said, you know what? We're willing to just risk it. I'd rather just get rid of TSA, and I'll just, and of course, you know, that is a little bit extreme, but the animosity towards the TSA is real. Because are we even in America? Is this even in a free country? You got to take your shoes off. It's totally pointless. That's, I think, the real reason the DHS is getting rid of that rule is because, number one, it's annoying. Number two, it doesn't work. I remember, what, it was a year or 2 years ago, there was a group that did an audit on the TSA, and they tried to take guns on airplanes, and, like, they got through. And so it's not effective. It's super annoying. The TSA bureaucrats are, a lot of them are power hungry. It's like, look, there's a lot of federal agencies that we need. Maybe TSA is not one. Maybe we can go back to private security.
Cook City News Talk 970 and 103.3 FM KBUL. Your home for Fox News, Hannity, and Montana Talks with Aaron Flynn. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, Nate. You're heading off for a summer road trip. You're stuck in the car. You're driving across the state, driving across the country. You need a little energy. Plus, you got that stiff neck, that stiff lower back. You need a little pain reliever as well. Well, let me tell you about a Montana-made product, Power Plus Pain Aid. It's got both energy and pain-relieving vitamins. And it was all created by a Big Fork Montana Marine Corps veteran. Drinkpowerplus.com. That's the website. And hey, for all of our Montana Talks listeners, right now, you can take 15% off your orders at drinkpowerplus.com when you use this code at checkout, Flint15. Flint15. Use that code at drinkpowerplus.com and you can take 15% off your orders. But yeah, I like to use it as like a pre-workout before exercising. And I also feel like it loosens up that stiff upper neck that a lot of you will get as well. Drinkpowerplus.com.
Hey, it looks like we got Cannon Man in the Flathead calling in. Cannon Man, are you there?
I'm there.
You're on the
line.
What do you got for us?
First thing I'd like to say is, I like the way you think, young fella. You got a good head on your shoulders.
Thank you so much.
You turn on your 360, and that's important because a lot of them don't. They get tunnel vision, you know. But anyway, I want to talk about TSA. You know, when they first came on board, I used to paint line trucks and prep them and paint them by myself. And the most I ever made was $25,000. And they put them to work, and they were paying them $40,000 a year. I have never got on a plane since then. I've been flying before. I had a chance to go to Alaska a bunch of times, but I wouldn't get on the plane because of that. And the reason being, 1963, in the early 60s, late 50s, they had a program. You ever heard of it called the Junior Pilot?
I haven't.
Okay, 1963. And back then, they couldn't get people on the planes because I don't think they were pressurizing the cabs, and the planes were blowing up in the sky, and they couldn't figure out why. Well, they had people freaked out. They weren't riding. And probably couldn't afford it, too, you know, the price of it. But anyway, in 1963, my grandfather, I believe that's when he passed away. My parents are from the highlands of Wyoming. Anyway, We got on the plane, we get on the plane. I became a junior pilot. I actually got a pilot's hat, a cap, and said junior pilot. I actually got to go into the cockpit and look around all the instruments and go through the cockpit.
That's awesome. Hey, so,
you know,
correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm understanding your call to basically be saying you quite enjoyed my little TSA rant.
Yes, I did, because it's more of that, let's hire people and pay them some twice the wage of everybody else because they work for the gubby? I don't think so, man. It's ridiculous.
I 100% agree. And not only with that issue, but all the federal bureaucrats, they're all making more than their private sector counterparts. You know, it used to be that if you're going to go work for the government, that you were actually like a civil servant or a public servant, and you took a pay cut because of job security and benefits and because you wanted to serve the public. Now it's you go work for the federal government if you want to get rich and if you want to make more than all of us people out here in the private sector. Really, really inappropriate stuff, which is why, frankly, we ought to just slash the size of the federal workforce about 10 times as much as Doge and Trump wanted to do. That's just my opinion, though. Let's go to Clinton Bozeman. Clint, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Is this David?
This is David.
Well, David, I got something to say to the whole world. Have you or any of your cohorts ever went to the website and find out about the world debt, of all the countries of the debt that they owe? And when you do that, I've already done that. A friend of mine done it for me. He's a computer whiz. And anyway, he found all the countries were in debt, except two little tiny ones. They all owed money. The only place I could think they could owe money to would probably be the World Bank. I know the Fed doesn't do all of it, and I think the World Bank does, but can you just imagine?
So what was the number? What was the number? What was the total number for total debt worldwide?
Oh, God, I never added it up. You can get it on the computer. Just ask for world debt in the countries that have the debt, and you'll see. It'll scare the hell out of you. It shows us at $35 trillion. And I won't. It takes too long. It's 14 pages long.
Jeez.
And anyway, that's a friend of mine that's the computer whiz. He sent it to me, and I sent it to some of our friends, too. But there isn't a country in the world that isn't in debt except two. Two little tiny ones.
Which
two? I'm not going to name them. I'm not going to name those. I want the people to find them.
Okay. All right.
I know them, but I want the people to look. And when you look and see that debt, you wonder who's financing. I want to know myself, and maybe you do too, David. Who is financing all that debt?
Yeah, I think
we're
a lot of
money now in the, well, we're putting money now in the U.S.,
well, right.
The Treasury's printing money, but nobody's buying our bonds.
Well, people are still buying the bonds. People are still buying bonds. That was going to be my answer to your question, who's financing it. I mean, a lot of it's the public with the buying the bonds. But you're also right, Clint. A lot of it's the central banks around the world buying up the bonds, which is the equivalent of monetizing the debt, which is kind of how you lead to inflation and currency collapse. So that's where we're at. Hey, folks, thank you so much for listening in to me, guest host the show the last 3 days. It was an absolute honor and pleasure of a lifetime. Thank you to Aaron Flint and Caden here at the studio. Looking forward to my next chance. Thank you all.